All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started. It's going to go quick today. We're only doing an hour. We're doing the power hour. Questions are starting to roll in pretty heavy. So if you've got a question, go ahead and press one on your phone and we're going to get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. And this is the show where we take your questions, answer your calls, and try to find you answers about everything engines, maintenance, performance, modifications, upgrades, fuel mileage, troubleshooting, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. And we're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. I'm going to bring in the guys from Pittsburgh Power. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Kevin, thank you for having us. It's a pleasure, as always.
Great to have you here. The questions are piling up already. Anything you guys want to start with this week?
Oh, I just want to say, because of the holidays, the shop is a little bit slow, so if anybody needs any work done, you can get in basically right now without an appointment. And we now, because of the addition of some new mechanics 2 years ago, we kind of are a bumper-to-bumper truck facility. We do brakes, transmissions, clutches, rear ends. We have a truck in right now that we're putting two differentials in. So just about anything that somebody wants to do, we can handle.
Excellent. Anything else? Should we get to some calls?
Yeah, not a whole lot in the last week.
Hey, I did see that closer to you guys, just northwest of Columbus, Otto is going to make another autonomous run next week. They're going to do this one in rush hour traffic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah, they're pretty serious about this. You know, the one they did in Colorado, they did really early in the morning, and the point was to avoid the traffic on the first one. But already, they're going out and putting it right into heavy traffic to see how it does. Short run, it's going to be about 35 miles, just like I say, little northwest of Columbus. So it should be interesting.
This is happening really fast. I was watching, I think it was CNBC the other morning on the weekend, and there was they'd covered an event in California at Willow Springs, which is a racetrack, similar to the ones that I sometimes work at. It's a road course. And they had autonomous races. So there are geeks out in California and coders and guys who are into this sort of thing had built autonomous cars, and they put them on the track together and had them race around the track with no drivers. And it was very successful. It worked well.
You know, I got thinking about something. There's this argument that a lot of people believe that, you know, these autonomous trucks are going to have a driver in them as a backup. And I don't think so. And I've talked to some analysts who don't think so. And, you know, I talked about why it doesn't even compare to the airline model. There's too many lives at risk in an airplane. But then I got thinking, there's another model of airplanes that we're using heavily right now. And I'm wondering if that model may end up working in trucking. And that's a remote controlled drone. I mean, we're flying drones all over the place. Military drones, the, you know, pretty high tech stuff. And I could imagine somebody sitting in a room that could probably monitor, I don't know what the number is, 10, 15, 20 trucks at a time? That's that's a much better backup than one person in one truck who isn't going to sit there and pay attention the whole time. I mean, what would be the point? If you have to sit there and pay attention the whole time, you might as well drive the damn truck. So I don't think this model that we think of, you know, somebody sitting back in the bunk or whatever. I mean, that's kind of the way Otto's doing it right now because they have to. But I think if anything, it could just be that we remotely monitor these trucks as a backup.
It's going to be interesting one way or the other. Yeah. That's for sure. But yeah. I had a guy in the shop the other day that told me that some of these truck companies, this was news to me, but they'll run three. Generally, there'll be three, you know, immigrants of some sort in the truck that run 24/7 and like hardly even stop for bathroom breaks. I didn't realize that was going on out there. So, you know, rather than three guys, you know, that are sleeping in the truck, living in the truck nonstop, I trust the computer more than I trust those three guys, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah. And let's just think about it, even at the lowest cost. I mean, I've heard this, you know, there's a lot of talk about this happening in Chicago with the Eastern Europeans. And I know it's happening, but it's one of those things that the story keeps getting retold more and more, and then people start believing that it happens more than it does. I know it happens, but it's not all
the language. I couldn't use the language that our customer used to describe it. Let's put it that way. I was struggling for a nicer way to put it. But yeah. And I'm sure it's exaggerated like most things are, but still, it's still scary to me.
Well, it is. But even if we think about that, let's think about the lowest pay. I mean, I have to believe those guys putting on that many miles are making $30,000 a piece, like minimum. Maybe it's a little lower, but I kind of doubt it. But if they are, that's 90 grand a year. Technology can do that a whole lot cheaper. That's 90 grand plus it's workers' comp plus it's risk and liability. And if you're a big enough company, there's got to be health insurance involved. And so, again, you can do that and that keeps the truck running 24/7, but technology could run the truck 24/7 and it could happen a whole lot cheaper.
Yeah, even after the initial investment, I'm sure. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to California. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I had a question about the reprogramming the Cummins ISX by Pittsburgh Power, and also a general comment about the fidelity of your program.
Ethan? Hello?
Okay.
Yes. Ethan, do you want to answer this?
Which ISX?
It's a 2012 ISX 15, and my question goes to, if I were to get the programming, I'd like for you to retell the benefits of the programming that you have for it. But my question is, if I were to do the programming and then I got an error code and I had to go to a different shop for service or to respond to the error code, will your programming throw any anomalies into the error code system that somebody else might not be able to figure out what's going on with the truck if it's a DPF error or something like that?
No, we purposely don't interfere with the codes, like turn them off, you know, so that it doesn't cause problems for other shops, because that's a big problem we've seen here even before, where someone goes in and they just turn the fault codes off, we'll say, and that the lights off, the problem solved, but the truck's not really fixed. So no, we want to be able to diagnose the truck just as, you know, the OEMs would there, so anybody can follow their process and still solve it correctly.
Okay, so nothing you do then would create false codes or something that other people can't figure out what's going on. That's good to know. And then what, again, are the benefits that you've seen on that engine?
Fuel mileage and horsepower gain. So you're going to be able to pull the hills better. The truck's going to run, you know, more free. And, you know, typically we see an improvement in fuel mileage.
Based upon how you drive the truck, obviously, but is there a range? Or are you thinking a half mile per gallon or quarter mile per gallon?
It varies. It varies, depends on what you do. I mean, if you're heavy haul, you're not going to see near as much gain on the fuel mileage as you would if you're, you know, lightweight.
Right. Okay.
sometimes we find on the heavy haul guys, especially the ones that are down to 4 mile per gallon, they gain a 3 mile per gallon because now the truck can finally cool and they don't have to have their foot buried to the floor. So a lot of times it's, and back in the days of the power box, that's when we saw the best advantage was a guy, one particular guy out of Boise, Idaho. He was in the high threes and low fours with a C16 cat on, I think it was 11 axles. And he went up a full mile to the gallon, so.
Well, mine's not a heavy haul application. It's a straight 53-foot van from Southern California to Milwaukee every week, and I probably gross is about usually about 70,000. So, and I get right at 7 miles per gallon, and I run 65. So,
well, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't get 7.5 and possibly 8. Do you run? Do you drive on the rolling hills with your foot, or do you let the cruise control do it?
All right, the music's playing. We're going to have to get to a break. We'll come right back and get to more stuff right after this. Stick around. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan and John with me from Pittsburgh Power. You know, Bruce, the other thing we see here with all of your tuning on any engine is we see much lower soot numbers on the oil samples.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It is. And that's, you know,
why do we get that? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's one of the big problems we've been facing on the new engines is just a lot of soot, and it's hard on the engine. But we're noticing here that most of the engines with your tunes on them come in under one on soot pretty consistently.
Man, that's fantastic. When we get John's soot trap on there, we may bring that down to zero.
Yeah, you know, my one of the two engines that I've always really liked as far as soot, 6NZ in the late 90s, Series 60s, we normally look for less than 0.1. That's how they show it on the oil sample. It comes in as less than 0.1, which is virtually no soot at all. And that's pretty common on those two when they're running right, but very seldom. An N14 will do that as well if it's running right. But the newer engines, we never saw that. And now we're starting to get closer to those numbers. We're under one on a lot of your engines that when you've tuned them. And like you said, I think between the tuning and the soot trap, we could get that soot level down to the same as the really good pre-emission engines.
Man, that's fantastic.
Yep. Hey, Kevin, what kind of numbers do you see from stock engines with working? I don't know if you have all the info in front of you with the analysis that you look at, but from stock engines with operating EGR systems, because it should have them anyway.
You know,
what numbers you normally see in the soot?
In the 1 to 2 range, and if it's in the 1 to 2 and it's just a stock emission engine, that we just figure that's kind of normal. You know, I don't try to get it down because other than something like your tuning, we've tried everything else and nothing brings that number down under one. And many of them will climb up in the 2 to 3 range. And that's when we'll start to work on it. You know, maybe the overhead needs set. Maybe, you know, we've got some intake restrictions somewhere, a charger cooler leak. But if it's if it's in the 1 to 2 range, we figure that's kind of normal for an emission engine. But once you guys tune them, we're seeing them drop down under that one level, which is really nice to see.
Sounds good. Yeah. Just cause I need to gather some data here before we start testing.
Yeah, good stuff. Let's get to another call. Let's go to Texas. Eric, welcome to the program.
So, 2015 P389 was a Cummins ISX, 286,000 miles on it. October, I installed the OPS, look at my first oil. And then just this past weekend,
hey, Eric, you're breaking up, and I'm missing key words here. So we're going to put you back on hold. I'm going to see if we can salvage that line, and we're going to try to come back to you. Let's go to Kansas. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hello, gentlemen. I am a hobby trucker. I am taking the winter off. I'm rebuilding a Series 60. I'm doing the work myself in my garage at the house, so it's an out-of-frame. And I am having the machine work done. I live in Denver, so I'm having the machine work done on the block at a local industrial machine shop here. So my question is, having the block, the deck resurfaced, having the crank straightened if it needs it, turned down if it needs it, and having the block straighten the crankshaft journals line hone or line board. Are there any disadvantages to all those functions? And is there anything else that I should consider doing?
Now, when you resurface the block, you need to know how many thousandths they're taking off. And then you'll want to check your piston to deck height. And you may want to put our 10,000ths thicker head gasket in there to bring the head back up to where it's supposed to be, so you have the proper clearance in your cam gear and your crank gear and accessory drive gears and bolt gear.
Right. Yeah, I've actually talked to John about that before, so that's definitely something I'm aware of. Yeah.
Are you putting our manifold and turbo and ECM programming on it?
I already have it.
Okay, good. Are you going to balance the pistons and the rods?
Yeah.
Okay. That's critical today. John, did you want to add something?
No, I've got to, that reminds me, I need to order another batch. We sold out of the first batch of the 10,000 thicker gasket, so I've got to get another batch of those coming in.
Did you make a note?
I will do that. I just wrote myself a text on my phone for that. So, yeah, I'll do that.
What's the price on those head gaskets?
I don't recall. I think it was 3.25, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, it was pretty reasonable for what it does, but yep. I think 3.25 is
great. And if you were to order some today, how long do you think before you'd have them on the shelf there?
I'll have them within the week.
Oh, great. Okay. As far as turning the crankshaft to go with, I don't know, like maybe a 10-over bearing on the rods and mains, there's no disadvantages to that? It doesn't weaken the crankshaft or anything?
Well, there's a lot of disadvantages to that. You don't want to do that. You want to polish, magnaflux, and straighten. You don't want to really cut that crank.
Okay.
If it needs cut, give us a call. Let's talk about options, okay?
Okay, yeah. I'll give you guys a call later this week and have some more questions for you then.
All right.
Congratulations. It sounds like a nice winner.
All right. Yeah, it does. Let's move on to Nevada. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Well, for starters, I got your Pittsburgh Power 10 last month or September and a Schneider glider, and it's a whole new truck. It's wow, it's amazing. But
is that on a 60 series?
Yeah, it's a 12.7.
Uh-huh. Good.
And now I've got, when I if I sit and idle for like 2 or 3 minutes and then I start going, it smokes really bad. And it's actually backfired a few times on me. Going down the road, I never have an issue. It's just if I stop at, you know, like a long red light, and really, really bad.
Has the valves and injectors been adjusted lately?
No, I haven't. I just bought it 2 months ago, so I haven't. Do you think it could be something as simple as just the overhead?
Yes, that's where you need to start.
Okay.
That's always, you know, one thing you do when you have a power loss is you change the fuel filter. When you're having a smoke issue, you set the overhead.
Okay.
Set the overhead, give us a call. If that doesn't clear it up, try to get back into the shop and let's take a look at it and let's make it do it on the dyno.
Have you had this truck in cold weather yet? Is this at all a function of it being cold?
No, well, I do nothing but cold weather. It's Indiana to the northwest, so it's always cold. But no, the cold really seemed to affect it very much. I mean, when I first started in the morning and it's cold, it smokes a little more than it should. Sometimes it's not real consistent there.
Okay, I'm concerned that it's got the 15-to-1s in it. Yeah.
Yeah, if it's a BK or
PK.
PK.
Yeah, if they build
PK or an MK. And
yep.
Then I wonder if it could have a cut O-ring on the bottom injector.
Well, that could
happen should affect
too, yeah.
It more under pressure and not so much under idle, but it
right.
Can be an O-ring on an injector problem. It's clear when you're pulling because you have boost, but at an idle when there's no boost and not enough heat, it only takes 8 horsepower to idle a 14-liter engine, so you're a 12.7. So let's say it takes 7 horsepower to idle that engine. It's not enough to burn all the fuel, and if there's a cut O-ring on the bottom, it's allowing fuel to run right down past the injector tip. But the
okay.
First thing to do is set the overhead.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to put it in my usual shop tomorrow, and we'll see if they can figure anything out.
All right. Keep us informed, okay?
I will. I thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. There's the music. We're going to head into a break. We're going to come back and get some more of your calls and questions right after this. So don't go away. More stuff right around the corner. If you want to join us on these recordings, our podcast, any of the special shows that we do, it's really easy to get on our text message list. Just send a text the word listen to 99,000, 99,000, just one word in the body of the text, listen, and then every time we're doing a recording, a podcast, a special show, we'll send you a text message about 15 minutes early with the number. You can just dial in and join us. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power with me, and we're going to get back to the phone calls. We're going to head off to Nevada. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Say, I got a buddy that's got it's a T680, I think is what it is, Kenworth. It's a 2014 with a pack car engine. He keeps running into a lot of different issues and stuff, and the last one was DEF was crystallizing. Is there a heater in that tank? And can you guys do a full service for cleaning out his whole DEF system and reprogramming that engine?
We can service that after treatment system. That actually shares an after treatment system with Cummins, so that's something we're very familiar with. and I would love to get one in here. We've not had one here to work on yet, but that is a shared system. We're working on programming for that. We haven't got it yet, but we're working on that at the moment. But all the same work that we do on Commons, we're authorized to do now on PACCAR, so we can do his any after treatment and EGR maintenance. We can, you know, do overheads and any service on the engine at all. So you could encourage him to get it in here as soon as possible.
Okay. What is there a heater system or something that in the DEF tank at all?
No, there is not. No heating at all. Nope.
Okay. All right. So that. Because he was out, he some dollars. They figured they'd fix something, and then he'd drive away, and he'd make it about a mile and a half away, and he'd turn around and come back and bring it right back to the shop. And after the third time, in I don't know, 12 hours, he was finally able to go down the road. So, and they replaced the pump for the DEF. They replaced I can't remember everything. He named a whole bunch of stuff, and he's not mechanical, so what he actually said may not have been what it was.
Well, tell him the best thing to do is to get it to our shop.
All right. Do you know how long before you guys will have the programming figured out for that pack car?
Well, hey, John, if we call the engineer, don't you think we could get it within the day?
Looks like we lost Ethan and John for some reason, Bruce. I just looked up and they're gone off the board.
They're gone off the board. Okay. That's because I'm on my cell phone. I think with our contact at PACCAR, we could have it within a day. So if we knew he was coming in, we would accelerate that. So if he'd call and say, hey, I'll be there next Wednesday, we would make it a point to have that program.
Got it. Well, we also lost Gary, the caller, as well. I'm not sure what happened. Both of them just disappeared off the board. So we'll
Just you and I.
Yeah, it might be. We're on our own here, but I think we can handle it.
We have for quite some time.
That's right.
Hey,
go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, the people with the 2014, 15, and 16 ISXs, they really need to think about this full tilt intake manifold. I mean, it's an easy half mile of a gallon. Parts and labor would be about $1,700, and it eliminates the scoring of 1, 5, and 6 cylinders because the way it distributes the air. We're going to have a movie of it, how it flows the air, on our website pretty soon.
Oh, good. When you get that done, send it over to me, and we'll post it on ours as well.
I will do that. In fact, I'll work on that this afternoon.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. Let's go to South Carolina. Al, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Hello, Bruce. This is Al from Fort Myers, Florida. I'm the one that you did I'm the one you did the first DD15 tune on.
Okay,
I just wanted to call and do an update. Haven't talked with you in a while.
Yeah, it has been a while.
Yeah, just want to let you know that I am up about a half a gallon on my fuel economy, and I'm running 70 as a rule now as opposed to 65. So it'd be better if I behave myself, but
yeah.
Like I told you when I was up there.
At our age, we're supposed to be able to do that.
Well, I know. But like I told you before, since I've had the tune, The first 20,000 pounds in the box is pretty much free. I mean, you don't even notice it's there hardly.
That's amazing.
Fantastic. The difference is made, yeah.
Yeah, the problem is where you live. Everybody on that I-75 want to go 80-plus mile per hour. And now here you are trying to go 65, and it makes you feel like you're walking.
Yeah, well, you're in everybody's way. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Hey, I think anyway. I got nothing but good things to say. It's turned out great. You guys hit it the first time.
Well, fantastic! And did we do the engine flush on that engine yet to clean it out?
No, that we have not done.
Okay. So next time you need an oil change, you should come up and bring your oil, unless it's a type that we carry or can get, and let's do the engine flush to clean out everything that's been deposited in that engine. And then to John about getting one of those soot traps on there so that we can really keep it clean.
Okay, sure. I did have you put the OPS and go to synthetic oil when I was there at the same time.
Good. That's good. All right. Well, keep us informed, okay? Anything changes?
I will do.
John and Ethan need to know that, all right?
Very well. Thank you.
Thanks, Al.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for the call. Hey, we got John and Ethan back.
Are we
what
back?
Happened to you guys? You're back.
We disappeared. It just went dead silent on our end. We didn't hear a thing. Just went quiet.
The strange thing was we lost the caller we were with at the same time. Both of you guys dropped off.
But hey, John and Ethan, Kevin and I was able to handle it.
We did. We heard the tail end of that. Yeah. Yep. We called back in.
We did
good
okay.
Work.
Let's see. Let's head off to Missouri. John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I've got a Eaton Puller 10-speed. It's in a 2001 Classic, but I know the transmission was replaced about a year and a half, 2 years ago before I bought the truck, and I'm having trouble with the high-low range shifting. In the morning, when I start the truck, the module that sits on top of the transmission leaks air in the back two ports down into the transmission. And it will do it until it warms up, and it'll shift into high, but then it won't return back down to low until after you've drove a little while and it's warmed up. Now, I took the module off and tested it by putting a bolt and gaskets and washer to shut them back two ports off, and the module tested fine. And so I went ahead and put it back on, and it shifts wonderful once it warms up, but until it warms up, it will not shift back down into low range. Is that the piston or the O-ring problem, or am I looking at a fluid problem?
Well, the first thing I would do, how many miles are on the transmission fluid?
I'm not sure. Like I say, I bought the truck, and the transmission has been recently replaced, so I'm guessing 150,000. I have already got my wife, as a matter of fact, picking it up today, 5 gallon of 50 weight synthetic to swap it out just to make sure.
I would swap that first. Second, what part of the country do you live?
Arkansas.
If you get up our way, we have a really great transmission guy, and I think we could solve that problem for you. But for one of us to say what that problem is, that's going to... Go ahead.
Is getting to that piston and everything, can a person get to that without dropping the transmission? If you have all the exhaust out of the way to where you can go over the top of the rail, as a frame rail, to lift the cap off?
I think you can. What kind of truck is it?
Oh, it's a Classic. And I've got a weed burner exhaust, so the exhaust don't run on top of that frame rail right there. And that's how I've been working on that module, is just over the top of the frame rail. It's like a piece of cake there compared to what it would have been with all that exhaust in the way.
Why don't you take that module to a good transmission shop and have them look at it or swap it out and see if that fixes it.
All right. With that, we're going to have to get to a break. We'll come back and talk about that more. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. And John, the last caller there, when you change that transmission fluid, which I think is a good idea, it'd be a great time to sample that as well. And if there is some sort of an internal problem, we may pick that up in the sample. Let's go to Texas. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, gentlemen. I have a 2013 ISX15. About 6 months ago, I went to PDI in Texas, and I had a half of regen delete, which means they took the filter out and reflashed my ECM. And I'm getting ready to do the other half, which is the turbo and the manifold and the reflashing. And I'm just looking for your opinion.
I can't recommend that on the newer trucks. Those systems work quite well on the new trucks, and we work with them quite well. And, yeah, I really don't approve of taking it off, personally.
Yeah, we can keep them running, you know, just as well with them on.
You know, the old trucks, you know, the old stuff with the era of emissions that were known to be faulty, and these trucks have millions of miles on them now, and they're in the hands of owner-operators only and whatever. I don't mind that so much, but these modern ones are quite good. You really should work with it. You've got advantages with that VG turbo that you won't have if you take it off, and there are a lot of things that you'll actually be missing out on.
Yeah, you're going to lose Jake if you take that turbo off.
Yep.
All right. Well, I've run into so many problems with it prior to this that I was just in the shops, and the shops could never fix it. They couldn't fix it. I had $8,000 in less than a month on repairs, and I just couldn't go through with it anymore, so I did a half. All right. I was just wondering. I'm just going to do the other half now and have them. All right. Thank you for your opinion, guys.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, go ahead.
If he would have brought it to our shop, he wouldn't have spent that $8,000, and he wouldn't be having the problems that he's having. But some people just, if it's a couple hundred miles or 1,000 miles out of the way, they just won't bobtail or deadhead or try to find the load that way. And if they hurt themselves by procrastinating like that.
Yeah, I agree. And I've been, you know, the one thing I've been trying to get across to people is this is an ongoing effort. We're learning, there's a curve to it. And I've been trying to get it across to people that there was a time when we were just saying, get the junk off there and get them running right again. But I've been saying all along, we will get these engines right eventually. And we're getting closer and closer all the time. And like John was just saying, on the newer versions, leave that stuff in place, and you guys are figuring out how to keep things clean, how to tune it right, how to get them running right, and that's a far better way to go.
I mean, the very first ISX.
Okay.
And the very
if they
first
just maintain
ISX,
the. I'll go ahead, Bruce.
Very first ISX that we did was mid-January. It's coming up on a year anniversary, and we stay in touch with the young man because he's close by. He's only an hour and 15 minutes away. And he's had zero problems, and he loves the way the Kenworth runs. So, I mean, it's a win-win situation. Keeps you legal, keeps you clean, keeps the truck running great, 400 extra foot-pounds of torque, 150 more horsepower, fuel mileage increase, and nobody can bother you wherever you go, whether you're in Maryland, Jersey, California, or going into Cummins, or Peterbilt, or Kenworth. You're legal everywhere. So keep it legal and make it run great and keep it clean.
Absolutely. Hey, before we get to another call, John, I have got a really strange request for you.
Okay.
I think if you have time, I know you'll find time. I've been reading a lot. I get into these weird reading binges on stuff, and this is a little out there, but I've been reading a lot about EMP, electromagnetic pulse, and what happens to electronics on virtually everything now, including vehicles. I'd love to know what it would take to protect a vehicle's electronics from that, if it's even possible.
Ethan's across the desk from me laughing right now. I think he might have studied this a little bit.
From what I know, and it's just from what I've a little bit of reading, if the truck is on, you're in trouble. Because on electronics and EMP, it'll fry the ECM. If the computer's off, the odds are it will survive the EMP.
Really? Huh.
I mean, there's a chance it'll still fry, but...
Most of what I've read now is and there's still some argument about this because there isn't a lot of testing done on it, but almost everything I've read now is the electronics are going to fry no matter what, and the vehicles are going to be useless.
It also depends on the proximity to the, you know, the EMP
right.
that would go off. If you're
yeah.
right next to it, yes. If it was on, it's definitely done.
Well, the EMP that there's two real strong possibilities. One is just a solar flare that could happen naturally, and we might have some warning that one was coming. The other one, though, is a terrorist type attack, where it's, you know, exploded in the upper atmosphere and creates an EMP. And those are the two that they say are so widespread and so powerful that it would virtually make all vehicles with any kind of electronics useless.
And ironically, the United States actually did get hit by an EMP, but back in the day of the telegraph, right when the telegraph was starting to take off, it got hit and fried a whole bunch of telegraph wires.
Huh.
1889.
I just pulled up an article on my phone right now.
Yep, that was 18... it. I couldn't remember the year.
Who did it?
What's that?
Who did it?
It was a solar flare.
That was a solar flare.
Just perfect.
Wow,
yeah,
okay.
That was a solar flare. So just, I know that's a little out there, but something I've been studying and
I'll be all over this. Yeah,
I thought so.
Yeah,
I thought. Let me.
Yeah,
there's
cool.
There's actually a good book. Two good books. One is a novel that I absolutely loved. It's called 1 Second After, and it tells a story of a terrorist attack with setting off EMPs and shuts down the whole country. And the other one is actually more of a documentary. It's written by Ted Koppel, and it's more along the line, not so much an EMP, but if terrorists were able to attack the power grid from inside, because it's all connected to the internet now. But both of them kind of go through the same scenario of what happens to the power grid, what happens to vehicles. And it's the thing is, the U.S. as a country is kind of ignoring this. They've been getting warnings forever and ever that we're vulnerable from this, and they're doing nothing. They have no plan.
Wow. Yeah, I'll do some more research on that. I'm not much of a studier of the conspiracies and things, so that's maybe this one fell off my radar, whether it is one or not. I tend to not pay attention to much of that stuff, but I will definitely read up on EMP.
Yeah, take a look. The vehicle thing was what really got me interested, because there may be something individuals can do there. You know, as far as the power grid goes, if one of these things happens, there's nothing we're going to do to stop that, other than
no,
be prepared.
No, not at all. No.
But on the vehicles, I was just wondering, I think there are ways to shield electronics. I just don't know if it's practical on a vehicle to do it or not.
Obviously, you know, with a magnet, anything magnetic, you could do with an opposite pole. I mean, you'd have to give off a magnetism that would repel the magnetism from the EMP somehow. But, you know, if there was some sort of protection system, you think it would require an equal and opposite field, shall we say.
Well, I will
force field around your truck to keep this from happening. Think about that. Yeah.
I will look forward to your report.
All right. I'll look into this. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a little out there, but you know, I get on these binges and I read stuff like this. And the more I read, the more I see there are several possibilities that could put a significant portion of the power grid down. We did have it happen. 2012, there was one that could have been disastrous, but the timing was such that it kind of like a glancing blow. It was a solar flare, again, off the sun. They happen. And this one was fairly strong, but based on the position of the Earth, it was more like a glancing blow. But they said had it hit directly, we would have had major power outages. And the problem is, if they fry some of these transformers, we can't replace them. We have no way to replace some of our major transformers in the system. Kind of scary.
Yeah, I guess that the old PCBs, yeah, they are gone now. Yeah. I don't think you can build transformers anymore. Can you like that?
No. Well, I know there's a little out there, but I figured you guys were the ones to talk to with all the knowledge of vehicle electronics. So we'll look forward to hearing what the report might be on that. I want to thank the guys from Pittsburgh Power, Bruce, John, and Ethan. If you have any questions, give them a call because we're all out of time. We'll see you here next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, I hate to do it, but I got to cut it short today. I've got a webinar to attend, and we'll do this again tomorrow. Destination Health is on tap. See you then. Thanks.